Hey, this is Doc Mike. Thanks for joining me here live on Real Liberty Media. Good grief, I'm telling you. The craziest things happen when you have a home studio. Fantastic. Anyway, we're ready to go live. This is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. I'm just a guy shining light on the darkness, helping to spread the truth where the mainstream media chooses not to. Let me just check everything here. Canini. Oh, good. I know. No, seriously. So everybody knows I start my show at 6 o'clock, right? But for some reason, somebody has to come barreling in here right exactly when I turn the mic on. I'm not kidding. And, that's the way it goes. You know, it's a home studio setup. It's just like, you know, you're at home doing your thing. People are continuing to do their things. And sometimes those paths don't cross very well. Hey, could you all please post to any social media sites that you are a part of that we are live here at Real Liberty Media and that we have a live chat room. People can come and join us. Be sure and check out Behind the Woodshed with Hal Anthony tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern. The guy's incredible. 2 hours packed full of information. Stuff that can really help you, too. More in kind of a legal, I think, way to... Uh-oh. Maybe you should put that on... What? Put what on... I know! I should put... I should... You know, this is funny. I'm going to tell you the truth. I actually... lock one of the doors to the studio so people can't just bust in here. But they actually had to go out of their way and come through the bathroom. So there's a door to the bathroom, you know, that goes to the house and a door that comes in the studio here. That's just my bathroom. But so they had to go out of their way to make sure they came in. Anyway, who cares? Nobody really cares, right? It does kind of fluster me a little bit because, you know, I'm just that kind of guy. I just want things to, you know, just kind of cruise along, no interruptions, like let's just get this thing going and go. Anyway, so we are now going and go. Hey, and so Behind Woodshed with Hal Anthony, Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow, 2 hours, no breaks. The guy constantly fills you with information that's important and helpful. Man, it's kind of another whole segment of surviving, in my opinion, is like how to protect yourself legally, how to do things legally, man, that can help you survive and help you not be hassled by authority. I'm sure there's people who have other ideas and other solutions to that, but Hal does it in a very concise way, great information, well documented, and I really love listening to him myself. Also, on Wednesday night, you can catch Right on the Left Coast. It's my podcast about the Ravenwood Homestead. And things are coming to life, no kidding. Even though this week we were buried in about 8 inches of snow. Probably 8 or 9, maybe 10, between 8 and 10 inches of snow here. Let's say between 7 and 9, I think, officially. Really hard to tell. Like, we go out and measure it because, you know, you can look at the forecast and you can look at what they're saying fell. But except for right, you know, wherever you are, it's always a little bit different. So, you know, the hill we're on, we got hammered pretty good. So, and it was so nice, too. You know what came out of that, though, is... I kind of forget year to year because it doesn't happen every year that we get a bunch of snow and snow that sticks around for a couple days and then freezing on top of that and all of the stuff that we have to do to kind of keep everything going here on the homestead. Like, you know, usually that's the beauty of living kind of in the Pacific Northwest and kind of on the west side of the Cascade Mountains here. Is that really, all in all, it's pretty moderate climate. So we don't have to contend with, you know, drastic changes in the weather. And you know, we have winter, but it's never really that bad. But man, when you get like a snowstorm like this, and remember we had one on Valentine's Day, you got to get busy. Like Rochelle even asked me to get up at, well, I mean, I get up early anyway, between 4 and 5 every single day. And she asked me yesterday, she said, "Hey, when you get up in the morning, could you start the heater in the greenhouse?" Because, of course, about 4 o'clock in the morning is when it is the coldest overnight. And, you know, we have things growing in the greenhouse. Now we have food growing in the greenhouse. So we really need to, you know, kind of make sure that those plants are protected and that they continue to thrive. So at 4:30 this morning, as soon as I woke up, I went out and lit the propane heater we have out there to kind of warm it up and keep everything from freezing solid. But then, you know, we have the fountain out here. We have two goldfish in it. They've been there like 15 years. I don't know. They've been there forever. And well, maybe not 15 years, but it seems like they've been there forever, like a long time. And they've lived through a few freezes, that's for sure. And but man, the whole fountain was frozen. Like there was no water moving. It looked like it was frozen solid. Of course, you know, a year ago or so we had that freeze that lasted, you know, we were out of power and it was a ice storm, not a snowstorm, and you know, we thought for sure those fish would be dead then, but somehow, man, they survived. Anyway, let's get on with the show today, shall we? So 9 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday. You can catch right on the left coast the Ravenwood Homestead Show here on Real Liberty Media. If you want to catch it live, or you can download the podcast from wherever, or check us out on BitChute and Rumble, where we don't get censored. So that's a great place to go. Not that I was going to say, not that I say anything too censorship worthy, but these days, hell, you could, you know, get censored for all kinds of things. Let's look at a couple of candidates for the died suddenly entry of the week. Here's this actor, Jansen Panettiere, die suddenly at age 28, brother of Hayden Panettiere. Sounded okay before unexpected death. Yeah, I'll bet. Look at this young guy. I mean, come on. He looks healthy, right? Oh, yeah. We're live. Audio, not live video. 28 years old, nice looking young guy, dead. You know, who knows, vaccination status or not. I want to check out a couple more of these, so let's go. Because, I mean, this week, you know, there's more and more all the time. Yeah, we are going to do live video. In fact, very soon. I'll probably test it Wednesday, I'll bet. No, actually, I might test tomorrow and have a live show on Wednesday. That would be cool. Okay, how about this? 12-year-old. What the heck? There we go. This is a new site I started visiting. It's USSANews.com. USSANews.com. And I just stumbled into this, I'm not kidding, in the last week. Man, they do a good job of getting a lot of stories up. Really great accumulation from all kinds of, I think, mostly independent sources. But here, this 12-year-old New Jersey boy dies suddenly during football practice. 12-year-old boy, right? From Newark, New Jersey, collapsed and died suddenly during football practice at a local field, leaving his grieving family with questions. Yeah, I bet they have questions. Elijah Jordan Brown Garcia was reportedly performing drills along with his team, the Essex County Predators, at the Westside Park football field when he inexplicably collapsed. Team officials say that Brown Garcia was not engaged in heavy activity at the time. They weren't hitting each other. They were just doing drills, running drills, or, you know, who knows. But he didn't get a commotio cordis, is what they're saying. So, yeah, why else would a young guy like this die? Don't know. There's one more in here somewhere. Oh, this is a big one right here, man. This is insane. I'm not kidding. This kind of blew me away a little bit. Let's look at this. This was a study out of Canada, too, by the way. It says, died suddenly, 80 doctors dead. Come on. Oh, this is one thing. It's okay. 80 doctors dead after COVID shots. Whistleblower sounds the alarm in Canada. And the key takeaways of this story is a total of 80 doctors in Canada who received the experimental COVID shots have died, and the numbers continue to rise. Funeral homes are allegedly suppressing information on sudden deaths, particularly those of Canadian doctors. Why is that? A top Vancouver cardiologist recently died suddenly, but his obituary contained no information about his career or medical background. Now, okay, you know, here's one of those things, like, the obit's usually written by the family, usually. Now, I don't know if, you know, the media, well, I should say, of course, I know this. The media in Canada, I wonder if they can just edit those obits however they want, because that's what it would require, is for somebody just to edit that obituary, you know, to remove that information. But usually obits are written by the family, which is also why you don't see a lot of political content in them, like, you know, this guy had the jab or didn't have the jab, or, you know, was a proponent of people getting the jab or not. But anyway, so look at that. I mean, we had multiple entries in the died suddenly. Now, usually, I mean, I don't really go look for these, honestly. We got to get off of this page because it's kind of driving me crazy. You know, I do have a little bit of that, you know, OCD thing. Man, if you only knew, for real, some things can really drive me crazy. All right, so back to the notes here. Oh, yeah, I wanted to talk about this a little bit. Hey, but before I end the show today, I have to get to the feel-good moment of the day, for sure, because something I read this week just made me, I don't know, so it made me so happy inside. And when you hear what it is, you probably think I'm a dick, but, you know, that's the way it goes. All right. Where was I? Oh, I said, I'm really glad I have never been one of those kind of doctors who I've never been a proponent of fluoride. Never in my entire professional life. Well, maybe in dental school, because you had to tell everybody to take fluoride and you had to tell parents to give their kids fluoride in dental school. I mean, that was a requirement. But as soon as I got out of dental school, this kind of shows you how far back kind of my history of nonconformity goes, especially professionally. Like, I'm not the typical dentist. I know that, but you know, as soon as I got out of dental school, like, in dental school, but you can't, you know, you have to kind of protect your ability to make a living as you go through life sometimes, until you get to a certain point, and then you can just throw caution to the wind and go, screw it. You know, they probably can't do too much to me now, like right now in my life and career. Yeah, they could shut me down. They could take my license. They could probably punish me in some way for saying whatever it is I'm going to say or might have said. But you know, when you're young, building a career, you know, you can't really just go around saying, yeah, I think fluoride's horrible and you shouldn't actually force it on people by putting it in the damn city water, because people will freak out and think you're an idiot because you're a dentist and here you are saying that fluoride is horrible. But guess what? We have a little story today. This is from that same USSA News. Get rid of the ad. And here it is. U.S. court demands release of report on toxicity of fluoride. Now, what's really crazy about this story, number one, I actually had trouble kind of figuring out what the hell they were trying to say in this story. But the reason is, Because there's so many damn agencies involved in this stupid thing that should be really simple to get done. So I'm going to try and give it to you the best I understand it, okay? And I kind of broke it down like this. Okay, the attorney, so attorneys with the Fluoride Action Network and the national, attorneys with the Fluoride Action Network, and the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, so two opposing sets of attorneys. And the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, a parent agency for the National Toxicology Program, have agreed to the release of the long-delayed NTP, which is the National Toxicology Program, review on fluoride's toxicity. The release of the documents will play a major role in the next phase of the ongoing lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency. Where do you think this is going? I know where it's going. I know exactly where it's going. You know why? And I can't believe in all the decades that we have been promoting putting fluoride in the water. Well, one is, I was going to say, I can't believe that we haven't somehow snuck something else into, you know, the water supply of big cities. Because, I mean, once you've kind of agreed that, hey, we're going to put fluoride in the water because it's healthy, because it'll prevent dental disease. This is another COVID jab, in my opinion, because fluoride in the water has not prevented dental disease by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I'm booked out for months. Hey, I actually had a patient call me yesterday. I'm not going to really say who this is, but it's somebody very close to me, like extremely close to me. You could say we share some DNA. And they actually reached out to me because they couldn't get into their dentist until June. I was like, man, consider yourself lucky. I'm booked out till August, but, you know, because it's somebody I'm related to by blood, you know, I'm going to do everything I can to get them in and get them seen, you know. But yeah, we haven't really, you know, I wouldn't be booked up till July or August if, you know, fluoride in the water had worked all these decades, right? I would be able to kind of kick back and look at my schedule in the daytime, in the morning, go, hey, I got, you know, a couple of patients this morning, maybe two or three this afternoon. I'm going to have a coffee in the middle of the day. Going to kind of put my feet up and relax. Oh, no, there's none of that. There's no time for that. We're booked up forever. And, of course, you know, I took another day off a week, so, you know, that just extended the length of time people are going to get seen out the other direction, but that's not a problem. It's not my problem, anyway. I'm doing everything I can, and I honestly am doing everything I can, seeing a lot of people, providing a lot of care. As long as I can still do it, I'm doing it. At least 2 days a week, maybe. Yeah, no kidding. They've had notice for a while, right? All right. So, yeah, how many agencies did I already mention? So we have Fluoride Action Network, who's actually the good guys here in this one. They just want the information to come out. They just want everybody to know the toxicity of fluoride, which I think we all should be aware of. Oh, my God, and I'm hoping it's not going to be one of those things, although I've got nothing to worry about. I hope it's not going to be one of those things that after the lawsuits are all done, I mean, after the court cases are all done, they don't go, hey, so everybody can go sue your dentist because they've been promoting this fluoride thing. Nobody will ever be able to accuse me of recommending fluoride because I don't. I know it's unusual, but, and especially forcing it onto people by putting it in their water. It's the craziest thing. But really no crazier than any other pharmaceutical, honestly, right? It's like we tell people that they have to do this thing or take this drug. Never saying it's going to heal you. It's always that, you know, hey, you know what? I got to do something. I just realized, hell with it. I'm just going to leave it. Yeah, no kidding. It's just kind of a slow creep thing. It's like, hey, we're going to put this in the water. It's going to reduce, you know, the rate of decay. And, of course, we experiment, you know, on other countries first. I mean, that's generally what we do is go into, you know, South Africa or, you know, other impoverished countries and load them up with our experiments and see how they do, see if it makes any difference. But it didn't. I mean, okay, it probably did. Like, I got to do something. I'll be right back. Just hang on. All right, I wasn't gone long, I hope. Yeah, so nobody will be able to accuse me of, you know, telling them to take fluoride. That's for damn sure. Even my assistants will vouch for the fact. I think it kind of makes them mad because, you know, it doesn't really. They just know I'm not going to be the one to tell people, well, I like not smoking. I don't tell any of my patients not to smoke. Like if my patients are adults, which, you know, a lot of them are, and especially if they're smoking, you know, if they want something from me, they're not going to get like, I mean, I'd encourage them if they said they were quitting smoking, but I feel like you're an adult, man. Do you, baby. You make those choices and you pay the consequences, you know, for your actions. That's the way life is. And, yeah, so I got distracted by no, especially given nicotine blocked. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, and especially now I'm not going to tell anybody to quit smoking because it's one of the best defenses against COVID. Okay, I said it, and sure enough, so I'll probably get some kind of censorship for that one. Yeah, that'll take me off of Apple iTunes and maybe Spotify and Google. For sure. Okay, but back to my point about this frickin' article, man. So I kind of got lost in all the agencies that I was talking about. In fact, I started to write this line. I wrote, the bottom line here is that the Fluoride Action Network wants, like, dot, dot, dot. Jesus, do we really need all of these agencies? Because I started looking at all of them. I'm like, how many frickin' people have to be involved? And listen to the names of some of them, like National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences, National Toxicology Program, the Center for Disease Control, the National, did I already say the National Toxicology Program, the Environmental Protection Agency, the CDC, There's another one in here. I know there's at least one more. Okay, but anyway, so there was like so many agencies involved. And here's what is going on with this story. It's like, so the Fluoride Action Network just wants this. They just want what was discovered by the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences. They want them to post that publicly. And here's kind of a thing for us as citizens of the United States or any, you know, country where, you know, you voted for these people to be in office. I mean, the stuff that they're doing with your tax dollars. Like, you paid for this and voted for these people to be in office. And all of these little agencies are basically ours, which means the information they produce is ours. How we got somehow separated so that everything that's happening in the, it's like everything that happens in the government is happening in a vacuum somehow. And, you know, and that there even has to be a debate on whether or not we bring this information out is crazy to me. Because, well, if we pay for this, like directly inside the government, inside the institutions over there in Washington, D.C., they actually did this study and printed this report or wrote this report. It shouldn't take a Freedom of Information Act to get this information out. Not only that, but it shouldn't be a huge discussion between three or four or five different agencies to decide whether or not the report is ready to be made public. And then there's all this infighting because, you know, Rachel Levine thinks we need to take more time and have some kind of summary written about the information and maybe have the information vetted a bit. Well, sorry. That really shouldn't be your prerogative, especially once somebody has made a case in a courtroom and you've been ordered to post this report, which is basically what has happened. And then, you know, the government's dragging their feet because you know the toxicology report is not going to be good on fluoride. And then what are we going to do? Tell everybody to throw out their freaking toothpaste? But seriously, think of all those producers of toothpaste, man, because I can guarantee you they put fluoride in there just because it's a thing. Has the ADA seal on it, it's got to have fluoride in it, almost guaranteed. In fact, one of the best products that was ever created was a product called MI paste. And I don't know what MI stands for. I'm sure it stands for something, but it's like Mike India paste, MI paste. This paste was actually made to harden your tooth structure. And yes, it actually works, because I know a lot of you are thinking, oh, it's some kind of gadget some dude made up to make a ton of money. And that's probably true, but actually this stuff really works because the minerals, the way they're suspended in kind of a milk protein, when you smear it on your teeth and you just smear it on with a finger and you just only have to smear it on the smooth part, like the front of your teeth, just a little dab on your finger, and the mineral, it'll stay on your teeth long enough for minerals to be taken up in your enamel and in the dentin of your teeth and make them harder and more resistant to decay. It's also very slippery. So if you suffer from dry mouth when you're sleeping, you put this stuff on your teeth and it makes them kind of nice and slippery and gives you that feeling that, you know, your mouth is moist. So it's not like you're sleeping in the desert or something like that. Well, here's what they did is after that was out for a few years, they made a new product called MI Plus. And MI Plus had fluoride in it. Why they put fluoride in it, I have no idea. Because what happened was the fluoride interfered with the other mineral's ability to bond to tooth structure. And fluoride's bond to tooth structure is extremely weak anyway. So it is not a good way to get fluoride in your teeth. A topical application doesn't work for adults. Actually, enteric, is that the word I'm looking for? Intraoral, taken by mouth application doesn't work for your teeth either as an adult. If there's any benefit to fluoride whatsoever, it would be while permanent teeth are developing. But I'm not a proponent of taking fluoride at all, ever. Because honest to God, all you have to do is brush and floss to keep your teeth healthy. It's so simple. You don't need a bunch of gadgets. Now, the MI paste will help people who have damaged their teeth through other means, like drinking, not even drinking, I will say sipping acidic drinks. You know, the use of drugs, basically any kind of abuse of a chemical of any kind can lead to poor oral hygiene because you're too messed up on drugs or alcohol to brush your teeth and take proper care. So you neglect them, and of course, you do some damage. And this stuff, MI paste, was actually made to make tooth structure harder and resistant to decay. So you could kind of slow down that process, you know, get yourself into a dentist and, you know, start, you know, getting your oral health back in shape. So it was like the stupidest thing ever when they put fluoride in it, but I kind of have a feeling maybe they put fluoride in it to get the ADA seal, which was stupid because it was such a perfect product. And luckily, you can still buy the product without the plus. And I recommend this product a lot to many of my patients. And when I do, I tell them, I go, don't get the plus because it's not. Wait, there's less. Yeah, there is in this case. Yeah, the plus is does more harm than good, in my opinion. Oh, well, and it's not only my opinion. Let's look at one of the last paragraphs of this study. And I know nobody's going to read this with me. But meanwhile, another study on the toxicity of fluoride has been published by scientists from Toronto's York University in the journal Science of the Total Environment. The study, Fluoride Exposure and Hypothyroidism in a Canadian Pregnancy Cohort, linked fluoride exposure with an increased risk of hypothyroidism in pregnant women. The findings are concerning because hypothyroidism is a known cause of brain-based disorders in children. And this is a clinical neuropsychologist and one of the study's authors. So there you go, man. I mean, you know, not that you guys needed to hear this, but I just thought it was interesting, to say the least. And I kind of wanted to bring up, you know, it's kind of cool. Like after, I don't know, 70 years? So this is 2023. Yeah, I'll bet you it had to be 50s or before that they discovered fluoride. And how they ever associated that with reduction in decay, I'll never know. I mean, I probably did know at one time because I probably had to learn it in dental school, but I can't remember. Like, you know, it was probably one of those days I just couldn't pay attention any longer. Anyway, let's move forward, shall we? I think I had, you know what? So somebody in the chat room said something to do with the Nazis. And I actually believe, I think it had something to do with a chemical gas, like I want to say mustard gas, but it could be just I don't know. I can't bring it out. But I have a feeling it's a mustard gas or one of those. Like, it could be a byproduct of making mustard gas. That could be it. Anyway, what? Yeah. See, it comes from that time. I know. I got to check back through my notes. Nope, I got that. Where are we at? 35. We're cruising. Oh, this is a great story. Well, let me just I'm going to get this story out of the way because I think I did kind of cover this story once. So we're just going to do it again. maybe a little more in depth, because last time I talked about this story, I actually was talking about dentistry again, because it kind of goes along the same lines. So in this story, it says why nearly 45% of American school-age children suffer from chronic health conditions. And the bottom line to this story was, I'm going to read my notes. I think this is a great article. This is such a common problem and one we deal with on a daily basis in our home and at my dental clinic. It is, as I say to my dental patients, it is so easy to prevent dental disease. Just 4 to 6 minutes a day will do it. But people don't have that kind of time. Just ask them. Same goes for this chronic disease and why 45% of American school-age children suffer from chronic health condition is because they don't eat well. Like, they literally eat crap, like horrible food. And some docs have taken the time, because let's face it, doctors have been put on, you know, this regimen of being able to only see patient, you know, however many patients they have in a day, they have like 6 minutes to talk to them. 4 minutes, something like that. They don't have time to fix you. They have time to kind of figure out what prescription you need, write that prescription, and get your ass out the door so they can move on to the next one, because the insurance companies are only going to pay so much, you know, and you got to get in and out to make a living as a doc. Now, that's not true. I'm sure they make all kinds of money, but their bottom line is they have to see a ton of patients. I feel sorry for them. Although I'm kind of doing the same thing, aren't I? Of course, I get at least 30 minutes. 30 to 45 minutes per patient. That's pretty damn good, I think. I don't know. But anyway, so some doctors have actually taken the time to take some of these young kids, children who have chronic health conditions, and they actually sat down and talked with the mom and the dad and the grandma and whoever was in the family unit there, the nuclear unit, and talked about, you know, getting some real food in these patients, children, kids. And a huge percentage of these kids were healed. Now, think of how ridiculous this is. They were healed by eating food. Like real food. You know, apples, oranges, celery, tomatoes, lettuce, spinach, you know, bok choy, kale, you know, snow peas, radishes, did I say carrots? Probably. Yeah, but by eating actual real food, and there was no, like, I don't think they went, yeah, microgreens. I don't think they went all out, like, they didn't go all vegetarian on this or anything. They just said, just eat food. Like, literally just eat food. Nope, nothing in a box. If it starts in a box, that's not food. And, you know, these kids got better. How crazy is that? Like, literally, just eat food. And don't eat, you know, 50 pounds of food a day. Just eat food. And, I mean, one of the problems with the crappy food in a box is it's not going to satisfy what your body's dying for. So you just keep going. You ever had one of those things, man? I've had them where, you know, I would eat and 10 minutes later I would go eat something else and I would just eat for like an hour trying to figure out the one damn thing that I needed to put in my body to shut it up, to make it stop asking for fuel. It just wanted a certain kind of fuel. And I had to figure out what kind of fuel it wanted, and boom, then I'm satisfied. You know what I'm doing now? On the Right on the Left Coast show, the very first one, I talked a little bit about fermenting vegetables, and I haven't started mine yet. I think tomorrow's a good day. I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna video it. I'll put it up on the internet, or not internet, up on BitChute or Rumble. Because one thing that I do now, kind of the first, this is going to sound pretty strange. My go-to thing when I want a snack, I found my go-to thing is raw sauerkraut. Raw, cold sauerkraut. I don't know what it is about raw cold sauerkraut, but well, there's a couple things that I think. It's crunchy, it's sour, it's fermented, and it's a little salty. So in my refrigerator here in the studio and the man cave, my room, I have a jar or a jug, bucket, whichever is available at the time, of sauerkraut right there in the refrigerator. So if I do get, you know, one of those things where I'm going to get up and go eat, straight to the fridge, I have forks on top, and nobody else eats my sauerkraut from this refrigerator. We have some in the other fridge. So I just pop the top off and I eat, you know, and I eat sauerkraut right out of the jar. And it's like two bites and I'm good. And you know what I've found is I have two bites and I'm good. I can stop. And it's not like, I know some people are thinking, oh my God, if I ate sauerkraut, I'd stop eating too. It's not that. It's something very satisfying that my body is asking for. Because when I do that, I no longer have a craving for other food. So that's just one thing I'm doing. And that's also why I'm kind of excited about the carrot and jalapeno fermentation I'm going to do. I'm going to start with that one because I know I've had that at some local Mexican food places. They have it all the time in there. And I know I like it. And so I'm going to make some and get it going. That's probably more of a homestead show thing, though, the whole, yeah, probiotics. I agree, man. I think it's something. I think it's something that, you know, you put that in your body and it just, like, goes to work and, you know, it kind of distracts, I don't know, whatever else your brain is thinking it wants to eat, like chocolate or, you know, potato chips or I don't know what. I still want potato chips once in a while. In fact, the other day, that's what I had for lunch or dinner. I can't remember. But back to this story, I mean, you know, this is why it's important to get your kids to eat food. And especially before they get stupid spoiled, you know, on stuff that they shouldn't be eating. You know, we have two of the grandkids that just, you know, they're so picky and they just eat junk. And yeah, they probably will end up with some kind of chronic diseases. I doubt it. I mean, are we always trying to get them to eat more food? I mean, so we had grilled burgers tonight. And I ate like 2 hours before the show. No, 3 hours before the show. Okay, two. Because I don't like to eat right before the show because I'm afraid it's going to make me burp and stuff. And I don't want to do that. So, but it was plenty long enough before the show. But these kids, like, they don't want a hamburger, a cheeseburger. Seriously? It's a cheeseburger. Like, it's one of the most unhealthy things you can eat. But it's real food. I mean, it has lettuce and tomato and onion and cheese and burger and bread. Yeah, it's probably not real good for you, obviously. But it's real food. You need some of those things. Anyway, hopefully they'll start eating real food soon. And, uh-oh, my camera froze up. Eh, who cares? We don't need no stinking camera. Here, we'll go to this thing. There we go. That makes it easy. Don't need no stinking camera. I don't know what's wrong with that damn camera. It just like freezes up for no reason whatsoever. I'm not going to stop it though. I'm just going to let it go. We just put on browser only for the rest of the show, 15 minutes. That's good. You don't have to, you get a break from looking at my face the last 15 minutes here. Back to the show notes, shall we? So chronic disease in children could be cured just by, and I'm not saying you're going to cure every single kid who's got chronic diseases by having them eat real food, but hell, what a start. And probably the cheapest damn thing you could do is actually get them to eat some fruits and vegetables and some unprocessed meats, right? I thought this was kind of a great story. Let me see if I can find it over here. Let's go. Natural immunity. Tell me it isn't so. The human body has a natural defense against... Hang on, I'm going to do this. Has a natural defense against COVID. Who could have guessed? Scientists find natural protein that blocks COVID-19 infection. Hard to believe, isn't it? This is the craziest damn thing. Now, the reason I put this in my show notes is not because I think everybody's stupid and doesn't understand that we can have natural immunity, but, oh yeah, meat and cheese is good for you. That's true. That is true. But specifically, they found a link between the craziest name for this. Let me go to my notes. The human body has a natural defense against COVID-19, which scientists at the University of Sydney say could pave the path. Pave the path for future vaccines against newer strains. The team discovered that the body contains a naturally occurring protein, the leucine-rich repeat-containing protein 15. Literally, the name of this protein is the leucine-rich repeat-containing protein 15, LRRC15, which ties itself to the COVID-19 virus and does not pass it on to other cells. In other words, it's kind of like a boa constrictor. It likes grabs on to a COVID-19 virus and wraps itself around there and just holds it in a choke so it can't enter into your cells. This is a naturally occurring natural immunity. It's a naturally occurring immunity to COVID-19, and we all have it. The team discovered that the body contains, for me, as an immunologist, the fact that there's this natural immune receptor that we didn't know about that's lining our lungs and blocks and controls virus, that's crazy interesting, said Professor Greg Neely, who conducted the research along with PhD researcher Lipin Liu and Matthew Waller from the Charles Perkins Center. We can now use this new receptor to design broad-acting drugs that can block viral infection or even suppress lung fibrosis. Hey, how about that? We'll never see it because as soon as they figure this out, you know, they're going to have to suppress it because we can't actually heal people with these strange, witchy, you know, experiments we do. Remember, there is zero money in healing somebody, which is not true. I think dentists are a good example of that. You can make money and heal people. You can. We think this newly identified protein could be part of our body's natural response to combating the infection, creating a barrier that physically separates the virus from our lung cells most sensitive to COVID-19. This is if you think COVID-19 is actually airborne, right? We think it acts a bit like Velcro, molecular Velcro, in that it sucks to the spike of the virus and then pulls it away from the target cell types. So anyway, this is awesome, I think, is that we actually, and of course, everybody knew we have natural immunity to COVID viruses. I mean, they've been around forever, not just since we started keeping notes. They've been around forever. And they specifically point out which protein we have as humans to give us natural immunity. Now, of course, the other side, the gain-of-function people are probably going to be targeting that protein with their little mRNA platform they've already got in, what, 60, 70% of the population of the world? So we'll have to see. Let me check a couple things here. No, we're still doing good. So let's see. I'm going to go to my feel-good story of the day just because I don't want to miss it. This, I'm not kidding. I hope you got to see this reaction on the internet. I don't think it's part of this, my notes here. But I thought this literally kind of made me happy. Black Panthers linked Marxist professor just found out that she is the descendant of a slave owner and a Mayflower settler and can't handle the news. There she is, Angela Davis. Oh, so nice to see you, Angela. I better leave it on the camera for a minute, right? Make sure. Oh, yeah, she's on there. This was just the greatest thing. I don't know why. I don't know why this just makes my heart feel so good. Oh, wait. Somebody came in with me. Oh. Yeah, just talking about eating good food, and there's some apple fritters being fried in the kitchen. I was told to stay out of the kitchen. It'd be bad for my health. All right, gotta go. We're going to wrap this thing up. I'm kidding. No, Angela Davis, no kidding. And so those of you who don't know who Angela Davis is, let me give you just the tiniest little introduction here. Angela Davis is a Marxist University of California professor who won the Soviet Union's Lenin Peace Prize and was once accused of supplying weapons to a black supremacist who went on to murder Superior Court Judge Harold Haley and two inmates. The 79-year-old identitarian, one of the founders of critical race theory, and a former Black Panther, was shocked to learn on Tuesday's episode of PBS's Finding Your Roots that she is the descendant of a slave owner as well as one of America's first settlers. Henry Louis Gates Jr., the host of the documentary television series that explores guest genealogies, provided the geriatric communist with a list of the passengers on the Mayflower. Among the 101 people aboard the ship that sailed to the colonies in 1620 was one of Davis's ancestors, William Brewster. Davis appeared unwilling to process the information, saying, "No, I can't believe this. No, my ancestors did not come here on the Mayflower. No, 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 no. Oof, that's a little bit too much." She couldn't handle it. You know what? Because probably going through her mind is one of the first things I thought of. Is like, damn, this is going to hurt the pocketbook a bit because, you know, I'm pretty sure along the way you probably, you know, really encourage people to make reparations, to pay reparations, especially those slave owners, you know. They need to pay reparations to, you know, well, whoever they can find to pay reparations to. And here she has her own, you know, her own you know, ancestors who were slave owners, and literally out of 101 people that came over on the Mayflower, she has an ancestor on the Mayflower. Now, honestly, it is kind of a feel-good feeling, because now she and many of us are kind of again exposed to the reality that you didn't control your past. Yeah, you can get on your high horse, you can make, you know, all kinds of gestures about how right you are because of your color, your ethnicity, your religion, your whatever. But a couple, you know, just a couple of generations before, you really didn't have control of any of that. It is shocking. I bet it had to have been, like, she's probably thinking about suing PBS for not, like, giving her a heads up on this before they went live. Like, she's really probably processing this, you know. And it's not going to make any difference to her. It's not going to change her. Probably will not change her one single bit, is my guess. Which is kind of sad. Because it should change her. I really kind of look forward. I really would look forward I really would look forward to her comments after she's had time to process this. And I'd really like her to answer some of these questions too about, you know, come, and it's would not be that unusual to come from, to be a descendant of a slave owner. I mean, we all know what went on. That's not unusual, but this was not like actually, you know, forced kind of thing. Yeah, it was actually just somebody who wanted to be a slave owner, and they had these descendants that, you know, are descendants of slave owners. And then the other thing is, you know, the whole reparations thing. You know, she really needs to. I mean, but here is the problem. As we always know, it's been proved over and over again, is that the left makes all kinds of statements that they just don't like to adhere to. You know, they want to force everything on other people, but they don't really want to do it themselves. So, no, I don't actually expect Angela Davis to make reparations to all of the slaves that were owned by her ancestors, although she should. I mean, honestly, you know, if we're going to do it, if we're going to force it on everybody who had anything to do with owning slaves, well, then, yeah, she really should, but she's not going to. So, yeah, that's about all the time we have. So let's do this. Be sure and catch Hal Anthony, you know, tomorrow, every Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Great two-hour show, packed full of information. So, you know, it's another kind of thing you can do to enhance your life and, you know, just gain some knowledge to protect yourself. And then, of course, if I could ever get there, you can catch right on the left coast, the Ravenwood Homestead Show, Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.